This is the podcast of the Germanic American Institute.
Welcome.
Willkommen.
We're Germanic-speaking European countries.
Germany.
Deutschland.
Yeah! Austria.
Österreich.
Switzerland.
Schweiz.
Blend with the Midwestern United States.
Hallo.
Hallo.
Servus.
Grüezi. Grüezi.
We are here and there, and we invite you to come along on the journey. If you notice the aircraft just cruising over our intro, this is appropriate to our midsummer topic. We talk about vacations. Where do Austrians, Germans, and the Swiss spend their time off? But before we get there, we talk about grammar. And of course, as always, I do have reinforcements in the studio here with me. Katrin.
Moin, moin.
And Claudia.
Grüß Gott.
So before we talk about vacations, where we spend our time, where we travel, and how we actually get there, let's start with the all-important, always-necessary grammar section. Katrin, what do you have for us?
Oh, we will keep it short and sweet today, appropriate for summer. I would like to talk about verb position in German, which is something that English native speakers tend to struggle with a bit, even in the advanced levels. We see a lot of English native speakers really modeling their sentence structure after English grammar. It's called interference. It's perfectly normal, and anybody will still be able to understand you, even if you mix it up a little bit. But maybe it's something people can be a little bit conscious about. Generally speaking, the verb in a normal German statement sentence is in position two. For example, Martin geht in die Stadt. Clara trinkt das Wasser oder Simone schläft im Bett. In all of these sentences, the conjugated verb is in the second position. Now, what does that position actually mean? It does not mean that it is the second word of the sentence, but that as far as sentence order goes, it is in the same position. If we switch Martin geht in die Stadt to der kleine Martin geht in die Stadt, der kleine Martin functions as the first position of the sentence because these three words make up the subject. If we want to add another element and, for example, want to say today Martin walks into the city, in English, we put the today and the comma in front and then go on our merry way with a sentence without really changing much. In German, we need to make sure that the verb stays in position two. We also do not add a comma at that point, which is also a very common mistake English native speakers make. The correct translation for today Martin walks into the city is heute geht Martin in die Stadt. So we switched Martin and geht around in order for geht to remain in position two. Please keep in mind that this also works with modal verbs. So if we use müssen, können, dürfen, and so on, the conjugated verb is always in the second position, which in this case now is the modal verb, and the meaning-carrying verb is being kicked to the end of the sentence, a pattern that happens all the time in German, actually. Heute kann Martin in die Stadt gehen. So we have kann in position two, that's our conjugated verb, and gehen, the action he's actually doing, goes towards the end of the sentence or to the end of the sentence. Now, this really holds true for any normal German simple statement sentence, but of course we also have conjunctions such as bis, während, als, da, weil, and so on. And with these certain conjunctions, a familiar German pattern happens again, and the verb again gets kicked to the end of the sentence because of these conjunctions, because conjunctions basically trump normal word order. For example, weil Martin heute in die Stadt geht, nimmt eine Tasche mit. We notice the geht goes to the end of the sentence here, weil Martin heute in die Stadt geht. Conjunctions aside, just keep in mind that the verb goes into position two, and just try to make a conscious effort to keep it there, and you should be good to go.
Now, both of you teach beginner classes. Mm-hmm. So this is obviously a topic that is taught very early on because this is the basic German sentence structure. What do you teach your beginners? How do you explain this to your beginners? Is this something where you just say verb in second place, always, 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 and then later on some of these other rules come in? How do you do that since it's so different than English?
I like to hold up my pointer finger and middle finger because that forms a V and also a 2. So that shows us the verb goes in second position. We try to practice this a lot. However, it is more of a problem really in the higher levels because people have more words they can use and they can be more flexible in word order in sentences. And that's when the English language patterns take over and the interference comes in. So I try to correct everybody as they're speaking. But of course, you don't want to correct too much either because you want to have a flow of German.
Yeah, pretty much the same for me. I usually try to establish some form of blueprint as to how we can actually break down the German language because there's so many rules and regulations already anyways that it sort of makes sense to have something that's predictable. And since we all know that everything in German is usually genderized, so Martin could also be er, we usually start with a conjugation table. And once we understand how to conjugate appropriate for the gender and then apply the verbs in the second position and then layer in the modal verbs, now we have that structure, so to speak, that corresponds to one another. And much like your verbiage that you were using, Katrin, is I kind of explained that in a way that once the modal verb comes in, the modal verb gets conjugated, asserts itself into the second position, puts on a big ski boot, because Austria, and kicks out the verb into the last position, whereas the verb returns into its normal, quote-unquote, form that you would see at the beginning of a conjugation table, so to speak, the base form of the verb. And that entire procedure rinse and repeat after every single comma, after every single new sentence that you bring in, particularly in the beginning where it's super useful to have something that you can rely upon and come back to as to how sentences are being arranged. That's essentially how I break it down.
Okay.
I approved? Have nothing to add.
Yeah, sounds really good.
And much like you said, though, it's once you really have the not necessarily full availability. I don't think anybody really has full availability of the German vocabulary, but extended variability in the word choices that you want to bring in. Then you also have the option to modify your sentences, bring more adjectives in there, and more explanatory elements, and that reshuffles the structure a little bit. But at the end, much like Katrin explained, this 1-2-3 perspective is always applicable. So it makes it really, really beautiful.
So beautiful.
Lovely. No, it's good. I mean, it's good for some people, I think, who are learners to know that there are structures and rules that are kind of fairly consistent.
Yeah.
And
well, especially since in German with a case system, the word order in a sentence is so much less consistent than it is in English.
Right.
So if you can switch the object and the subject, that, you know, provides a good amount of variation, but also instability. But if you then still know, oh, the verb remains in the second position, right, no matter what else I do within that sentence, that helps generally.
I mean, the same goes for one of the things that I usually end up having my students do is sort of speak waterfall exercises, starting with er fährt das Auto, er fährt das Auto in die Stadt. So you can build upon a sentence that becomes more and more explanatory of what you're trying to express. And once you understand the basic tools, filling in information that makes your language a little more comprehensive is actually really not all that difficult. It's just dependent then on knowing the correct article for the nouns and what you actually want to say.
Right.
It's really that, well, quote unquote, simple. I'm getting off my soapbox now. Okay. Katrin, anything else that we need to add to this?
I don't think so. I believe gender is always problematic topic, not in a societal sense, but in a grammatical sense, because no rhyme or reason with most of the words in German why there are a certain gender.
Yeah, for instance, die Lampe, der Tisch. Why is the lamp female? Why is the table masculine?
Why is all all alcohol masculine except for beer, which is neuter.
Oh, I didn't know that. All car brands are masculine, but the motorcycle brands of the same manufacturer are feminine.
Yeah.
It's weird quirks like that.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on, and I think we should eventually pick up the topic someday down the road, is what actually, are there any blueprints at all that we can rely upon to find out what the appropriate articles are? To be discussed in a future episode of the GAI podcast. But let's talk about the thing that's much more interesting for everyone who is enjoying the summer months as we are getting into them. It's called vacation. Katrin, you're about to embark on your vacation.
I am.
Where are you going to be headed?
I am going home. I'm going to Germany, and part of that time I will spend at the North Sea, and part of that time I will spend at my hometown of Hannover.
Outstanding.
And how long are you going?
I am going 19 days.
Yeah, so that's almost 3 weeks, right? Which here in the U.S. is almost unheard of for people to go anywhere for 3 weeks.
To begin with, and we talked off the recording just for a few minutes before we started, in the U.S. we don't have essentially legally regulated vacation days.
Or mandated.
Or mandated, right. So it's upon the discretion of the employer.
Yep.
In Austria, and I'm not sure if it's the same in Germany, in Austria, once you are an employee, you do have the right for 5 weeks of paid vacation. So 5 working weeks, Monday through Friday, which if you include the weekends to that, that's quite the significant chunk of time.
Yep. In Germany, it's just about the same. It's 1 day less. It's, you know, it says 24 working days, which, you know, it's 4 weeks and 4 days. So yeah, for all intents and purposes, it's 5 weeks.
Who's leading in Europe?
France with 30 days. So that's 6 weeks. Followed by the UK with 28 days, Italy 26 days, and then Austria, Sweden, and Germany all 25 days, 24 days. And then, yeah, interestingly enough, the US has zero legally required vacation days. So in Germany, employers are required to give you these vacation days, to give you this time off. In the US, it's all within the discretion of the employer.
And that's before we add nationally celebrated holidays.
Correct.
To that, which comes in addition. Christmas, New Year's. New Year's Day usually is a day off for everyone, and so forth. So there is, it actually goes beyond the 5 weeks or 24, respectively, 25 days. What's particularly interesting, though, is how are we using those days? And it used to be, at least in the old days, let's say 1969, it's where I have the statistics from, leading up to 2016, there's quite a significant shift. At first, we really were focused on spending our holiday, a lot of time during the summer months and then around Christmas. And those were really the two big buckets of time that we associated with vacation. And that has significantly shifted. So one of the headlines actually that I found stated, vacation time is any time. So I think, and we talked about this before again, was one of the things that is a contributing factor to that is just simply the cost of going on vacation. It is not cheap to go to Italy, to go to Spain, or even to stay at home in Austria. I suppose that's where some of the differences in the shifts come in, that people really reflect upon the off-season. And
right. So high season, right? Let's talk about high season and off-season. In Europe in general, high season kind of starts middle, end of June, and July and August, and that's considered high season. And it's really expensive, and that's the main vacation time. So, you know, hotels are booked and flights are booked, and, you know, Autobahn and any kind of interstates are packed. That's the main travel time.
Where do not the Italians, but the Germans spend their days on vacation?
Funny enough, so according to this research, Germans love to go on vacation, and the main travel places for Germany are Italy, Spain, and Croatia. But interestingly enough, about half of the people going on vacation stay within Germany, as Katrin just mentioned too. You know, people who maybe are from northern part of Germany go to the islands on either the North Sea or on the Baltic, which is, you know, beautiful, Sylt, or, you know, some of the other islands. Rügen is really nice. those of us who lived or grew up in the southern part of Germany, we can drive to Italy in 6 hours. So we tend to go there. And some Germans, obviously, if they are maybe from Berlin or northern Germany, if they go to Italy, they tend to fly because it's just a longer distance. But yeah, about 50% or more than 50% of 55% of pick Germany as their top place to go on vacation.
Yeah, it's about the same, actually. Well, reasonably close in Austria. That 43-44% respectively actually stay inside Austria and then use their car to get there. So about 66% of Austrians vacation with their vehicle as opposed to flying. And if you fly, then you usually fly somewhere close by as well, Italy and Croatia being namely the most favorite destinations with 22 and respectively 18%, followed by Germany. And that one struck me as really interesting, that we actually go to Germany for vacation, because as far as I remember, we usually went to Italy, we went to former Yugoslavia, now Croatia and Serbia and so forth. But I don't recall ever having vacationed in Germany.
I've vacationed in Austria before.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe it's, you know, and I mentioned that maybe it's the language thing, right? I mean, it's a common language, and then you can go somewhere, and even though you're on vacation, you can still speak the same language.
I think another factor, at least in comparison to the US, that always strikes me if we go on vacation with my husband's family, is that it seems Americans, when they go on vacation with the little time they have, they want to go, do things, see things. Mm. And then they come back and recover at home, basically. While in Germany, the emphasis really is more on relaxation and recharging. And that is one of the big reasons why Germany actually has so many vacation days in comparison to the US, that study after study has shown that if you take time off, if you recharge, if you spend your mind or your time on your, you know, thinking about other stuff other than work, you come back much more productive, much more creative. And really for your employer, it's a big benefit to send you on vacation.
Yeah, and numerous benefits, from stress reduction to actually really coming back and having had the chance to recover. What do you usually spend your time on when you vacation?
Well, again, I found this little statistic, right? And how Germans spend their time, how they like to spend their time on vacation. They love good food and regional food. Mm-hmm. They like trips in the area. And so if you go into maybe to northern Italy, you'll go to Venice. Or if you go to Austria, you'll go to Vienna. So they do like to explore the region, but then also swimming and going for walks and just relaxing and sleeping in and taking pictures. So those are all just kind of very relaxing and casual type activities, with the focus on recharging and just kind of taking in the surroundings and laying on the beach and just truly taking vacation from the busyness of life.
I think sightseeing is such a big topic in the US for vacation goers. I mean, I remember when I was still living in Germany, people were always in disbelief about these Americans that would come and, you know, 15 countries in 3 days or something in Europe, where it's go, see the sights. If we went on vacation, when we went on vacation, we would probably not touch the car for the 2 weeks. We'd have our bikes, we'd bike to the beach.
Yep.
Maybe at night, every once in a while, we'd go, you know, downtown or something, hang out there a little bit. But it wasn't so much about more. It was very much about less, just kind of chill for a while and then go back and work hard again.
Right. But it's still, you know, there's still that mindset and that culture. And obviously Germans also take their smartphones and, you know, kind of have a hard time disconnecting from work the same as the US. But they're still a lot more insistent on taking vacation and having downtime and just disconnecting from work.
Wasn't there recently something out of France? I believe, and I'm going out on a limb here, might be completely wrong, that the French employers cannot contact their employees in the off hours.
I think it's like after 8 or 9 p.m. or something mm-hmm. Or can't expect their employees to like respond to work emails or work calls after a certain time in the evening. Yep.
And the bigger companies in Germany do the same thing, actually, yep. where they have policies that after a certain time, no, you know, company communication can go over the company mobile devices anymore.
To touch back on why we're actually going on vacation, for instance, Austrians, 26% go for Kultur, Besichtigung und Städteurlaub, so for culture, sightseeing, and essentially visiting other cities. So diving into the culture of a different country. And what I have not seen, and I did a little bit of Instagram research, quote unquote, it's highly scientific, I have not seen a lot of Austrian vacation posters. There are the notorious travelers, sort of the travel people who make a living being perpetual travelers. But from the regular Austrian going to, let's say, Rome, I have not seen anything that's been excessively hashtagged with vacation and Rome or the Urlaub on Rome. It's quite interesting that we seem to, and I don't have stats on that, but we seem to actually disconnect to the degree that we put down the phone and really enjoy the culture and go to the museums or to the Vatican, since I talked about Rome, or to the Colosseum. And that's followed by, so that was 26%, followed by 19% go for beach and essentially just relaxation vacations. 17% visits their family and relatives, which particularly considering the density in Austria, I'm quite surprised because it's really just a couple of hours down the road, no matter which way you go. And of course, another question that applies is, are those families and relatives in other countries? Then, of course, the situation changes. And last but not least, aktiv Urlaub. So the bungee jumpers and kite surfers and windsurfers and skydivers of us, that's 13% who just go all out and do something that's a little more on the active side of things. So quite an interesting distribution.
It'd be interesting, too, to know what the age distribution is on that.
I don't have that. All the data actually is from Statistica.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at too for German stuff, and I don't have a. And Germans have a similar split. And one of the things we kind of mentioned earlier about when people take vacation. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, it used to be that the main vacation time, and that was the same when I was growing up, was during the summer. And now people tend to maybe take vacation at different times. In Germany, for example, I know the Germany has 16 states, and not all 16 states are on vacation at the same time.
Unlike France, where all of August is out.
And so some of the states start at the end of June. And then I think like every week they probably add one or two states. And for example, Baden-Württemberg and Bavaria, the two southern states, mm-hmm. they don't start their vacation until the end of July. And so it's kind of staggered. However, in Baden-Württemberg, again, the kids get 2 weeks off for Pentecost, which is usually at the end of May, beginning of June. And what happens then is they take their summer vacation then. And do that instead of taking it in the summer or right in the middle of July.
Did I catch this correctly? In France, all of August, it's basically they put up the sidewalks and...
Exactly. France basically shuts down, which is, not trying to anger anyone, but if you're looking for less busy tourism on the coast and in the tourism areas, you probably don't want to go in August.
Really? Interesting. So no services that are restricted or?
I'm sure things function to a certain degree, but, school's out all of August and it's the vacation month in France.
Interesting. Did not know that. In Austria, we go year round. We don't necessarily collectively shut down.
How many weeks vacation do kids get in Austria in school?
That is a very good question. We have, I think, 2 weeks for Christmas and then another week and a half for Easter. the summer months, we have 2.5 months off.
Yeah, see, in Germany, we only get 6 or 7 weeks.
Yep,
6.5 weeks in the summer.
I'm going from memory here. Mm-hmm. When I was back in school, it may have changed. I would have to actually double check that. But if anybody has the correct answer in case I was wrong, please email us. It's a perfect opportunity to drop our email address. It's language@gai-mn.org.
Before we finish up, I just mm-hmm. want to talk about one thing that Germans do on vacation, because we can't talk about Germans on vacation without talking about beach towels and lounge chairs. And Germans are notorious, especially if they are at some hotel somewhere on the Mediterranean, and they want to make sure they reserve the best lounge chairs or beach chairs for the day. Somebody will get up at 6:30 in the morning and put their towel on the desired lounge chairs to claim those chairs for the day.
So, and you are the people that place the towels.
Those are the Germans. They're apparently notorious for it, to the point that hotels now or places now forbid Germans to do this, because it was just this battle of who can get up the earliest and throw their towel on a chair.
That is interesting, because I was truly wondering for years, going to Italy on vacation, where if you just Google some Italy vacation, beach vacation images, and you'll find that the Italians are meticulous in lining up the sun umbrellas and the lounge chairs and so forth. There always are towels there when I get to the beach, and there is nobody around to actually ever sit down on this thing. And I was wondering, why can't I have that? But of course, you're respectful to somebody else's property, so you're not tossing the towel into the sand. It's you guys.
It's Germans who get up at 6 a.m. Uh-huh. and place their towels on the desired chairs, yes.
So we call this effectiveness.
We call this a little being too German, I guess. I don't know.
But there's almost an embarrassed facial expression. I wish you guys could see it.
Yeah, it's a bit much.
You know? Well, it goes so far as that at the sea, people at least used to, now it's, I think, prohibited, but used to build these little walls in a circle around themselves.
Yeah.
That was your book, literally your castle, your sand castle. And that is where your towels were. And depending on if you were two people or, you know, five with a bigger family, that's how the size of your bulk was. I know that on Sylt, this is prohibited because the wind has too much of an opportunity to take off the sand, which is an issue there anyhow. Mm. So people are really encouraged not to do this anymore. But yeah, this sort of putting a line between you and the other people is very much so a German thing.
Yep, and claiming your space, right? Claiming your territory for the day.
A densely populated country.
Mm-hmm. And since we are still predominantly talking with an American audience who listens to our podcast, the dominant foreign vacation destination for Austrians at the tune of 22%, give or take, is still the U.S., and surprisingly, New York City being the primary city for Austrians to travel to, closely followed by anything Florida-related. Whereas I have to say, I certainly appreciate the chaos that is Miami Beach, where you actually don't have a lounge chair, but you just place your towel wherever you please. Yeah. I do like that.
Yep.
Same for Germans?
Yep, Germans like to go, you know, if they fly, they like to go to the U.S. They also like to go to, you know, places like South Africa or anywhere in Africa. Because again, if you think about where Germany is located in relation to all these other places in the world, it's different distances than what we can imagine. But yeah, Caribbean and Cuba, Germans are allowed to go to Cuba. Mm-hmm. And
all right, vacation, 5 weeks for us, most of us. I hope you have the option to enjoy your vacation as well. If you're going somewhere special and you'd like to let us know about this and like to talk to us about it, your experiences, what you've seen and what you like or dislike, certainly please do let us know. And that immediately gets us into our festivity here that is coming up June 8th and June 9th. June 8th from 11 a.m. through 10 p.m. and June 9th from 11 a.m. through 5 p.m. And it's Deutsche Tage right here on the GAI grounds on Summit Avenue. We have a host of opportunities for you to connect with other people, of course, with our teachers here at the GAI, and also with what I would call essentially vendors or partners, I think would be more appropriate.
A little bit of both, yep.
Yeah. We have BMW Motorrad in the back parking lot. We have US Solar.
We have a whole environmental pavilion if you want to learn a little bit more about environmental initiatives.
And we also have a podcasting tent, believe it or not, where you can actually check in with us and let us know what you thought, what you've learned, and again, what you liked and disliked. Tell a little bit about your own story and how you came to actually attend the Deutsche Tage. And first and foremost, though, a huge props, congrats, applause, thumbs up to our two main supporters of Deutsche Tage, which are Aldi's and Paulana Beer, which means we will have Paulana on site. And we also have all kinds of food options.
Yep, so come check it out this Saturday and Sunday.
For more details, just look at our podcast lineup. There was one podcast preceding this one with Linda, who is the organizer of Deutsche Tage, and you can get everything you need to know out of this podcast.
Perfect. And then before we take off for today, I just want to remind people that we will continue our language classes through the summer. So the summer session is open for registration now. We're offering classes that are focused on conversation and other classes that are focused on grammar. Or if you want to, you can take both. There are summer sessions that are lasting 6 weeks, starting after the week of the 4th of July. And then also summer camps start in a couple of weeks as well. And so if you have young kids who would like to learn a little bit of German and get a German immersion experience during camp, we have 10 weeks of summer camp starting June 17th.
Awesome. Well, I think that was it. We'll slowly wrap up the show for today. Katrin, thank you so much.
Anytime.
Claudia, danke schön.
Tschüss.
And we will see you either at Deutsche Tage coming up again June 8th and June 9th, or certainly invite you to send us your feedback, questions, concerns, or topics for the future to language@gai-mn.org. And until next time, this is Michael signing off. Bis später.